Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, this is Paco Romaine.
And this is George Chen.
And this is SupDoc, a show where we talk about documentaries.
Today on SupDoc, we're taking a look at the 2010 documentary Marwan Call. After recovering from a brutal attack that left him in a coma, Mark Hogenkamp builds a miniature World War II era town in his backyard and creates photographic stories of its intrigues.
Marwan Call has a 98% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, while its biopic adaptation starring Steve Carell has only 35%. We probably won't be covering this on Biopsy.
First saw Mark, he's in his full World War II regalia. I go, "Hey, how's it going? What's that all about?" I was just astonished by the realism and the feeling. I felt like it was too amazing to not share with other people.
There's a curator of an art gallery that wants to display my photos.
What if this leads to tension and it's bad for him? Will he make it to the city?
It's like this is the one last thing that I don't ever want taken from me. I built Marwan Call for me, for my therapy.
It gets stranger by the moment, doesn't it?
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
All right, so George, I maybe you have to like refresh my memory. Did we hear about this when we talked to Beth Lissick? Is that how we first heard about this doc?
That is literally the first time I heard about Marwan Call at all. And yeah, Beth Lissick, one of our first guests when we started the show 5 years ago, and she had wanted to watch that, but we couldn't find it anywhere. It was like, right. It was not on a streaming service, hard to find a DVD of it, even though it came out in 2010. But yeah, she was explained it to us, and we're like, "Whoa, we do have to see this."
Yeah,
I don't think I saw it till maybe 2 years later. I think 2017 is the first time I saw it.
Me too. Didn't you get like a copy from the library?
I got a copy from the library. Oh, this was 2016. I got it from the LAPL, and we took it. I went to visit my sister. Me and Angie went to visit my sister in Portland, and we just like had the DVD on us, and we're like in a down period. We just like watched it. We're just like, that was fucking heavy, but it was really interesting and really, really fascinating.
Yeah, it is a fascinating documentary. So for you people that are listening to this, it's not going to be easy for you guys to find. I think it's streaming on Amazon Prime for $3.
I think that's well worth $3 to watch this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what you may be don't get, I mean, they think they kind of make it clear in the trailer, like, what happened to him. But then you don't really know what the motivations were for these things. And that is all kind of revealed as you watch the film. So I think, I don't know if I could say there's spoilers here. There's like, definitely, we're going to talk about it. Like, you're going to definitely talk about, like, stuff that is revealed to you in the documentary. So,
yeah. But, I mean, you may have, I mean, this documentary came out 10 years ago. So yeah, you may have already heard about Mark Hogenkamp and Marwan Call, the doc, and then his artwork, probably, but not maybe put two and two together. And you've probably saw the horrific biopic that neither George and I have seen.
No, people didn't watch it. It got, like, it lost like $60 million, apparently.
Oh, my God.
Like, it just was a box office okay, flop of huge proportions. I mean, let's talk about it. Like, neither of us have seen it, but the trailer made me never want to watch this.
Never want to watch it. No. And we both love Marwan Call, the documentary, so much. And when I remember seeing it, trailer at the theater, and just like in my head, just being like, oh God, no, like, no.
It would be like, a biopic of Timothy Treadwell where there's like a CGI bear. That's equivalent. That's basically what it was like. I'm like, oh my God.
And at the end, Timothy puts a saddle on the bear and just rides out into the sunset.
Yeah, something like that.
Like,
yeah.
Basically, they took away most of what made the doc so charming in the biopic. Like, they I don't think ever really talk about the fight. They take some stuff out of the story that was like more of the horrific stuff.
Right. So let's just say this movie starts with a hate crime. But what you don't know at the beginning is exactly why it's a hate crime. You just think it's like a bar brawl, but it's revealed that it is a hate crime as you get deeper into the story. So, yeah, this takes place in Kingston, New York. Like, I imagine it seems like it's 2 hours away from New York City because he has to go into Greenwich later in the movie. A lot is revealed in really interesting ways here because, like, how do you explain this to someone who's never watched it? Have you sat there and, like, try to get people to watch this?
Many times. I just told my roommate about it about 2 hours ago. I just always say it's an amazing documentary about a guy that was put into a coma and he wakes up a different person. And then he's this amazing photographer that takes photographs of this miniature life that he's created, not in his backyard, but literally like a 5x5 section of his trailer yard, you know? That's about it. I don't know what else to say. That's what makes it so good and so endearing and so complex.
Yeah. And like, I haven't seen it in a while. And then I'm like, even though I know what happens, I'm like, I still have so many questions. Like,
so many.
Like, why World War II Belgium? Like, it's like a weird fixation. It seemed like, okay, so Mark Hogenkamp is the guy who is beaten. He's put in a coma. He wakes up. He was like an illustrator also. And I read that he actually like assembled like showrooms for a living. That's okay. What he was doing. He was in the Navy and then he was doing this stuff. He was like assembling showrooms and it was like a carpenter, which I guess makes sense. He had all these tools and the ability to build this miniature city.
That makes sense.
There's two movies that this reminds me of. I'd say if you're a fan of The Devil and Daniel Johnston.
Love it.
And in the realms of the unreal, the Darger documentary, I think those are two good hooks to bring you into this because it sort of has to do with like outsider art, mental illness, and just like weird trauma. Also, like what reminded me about Devil and Daniel Johnston is also this kind of like this kind of fetishization or like this weird, this sort of like his relationship with women is really complicated, right? But it kind of drives him in through a lot of this.
That is absolutely true. Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good parallel. The Devil and Daniel Johnston. I didn't quite think about that. And I also I have to be honest. I didn't really think of Mark as having a mental illness.
Right.
I guess because it was more physical, a head injury versus like an emotional injury, if you will.
Sure. I mean, he has a disability. We can just say that he has a disability.
Yes.
And, but I think like Here's another thing I thought watching this now is just like, oh, America creates outsider artists because we don't have free healthcare.
That's amen.
That's basically this guy has to create this whole universe for himself because he gets cut off from physical therapy after a debilitating head injury where like his whole memory is wiped. He has to relearn how to walk. He has to relearn how to write. His hands are shaking like he can't. And it's like, oh, you need to pay. I think he had to pay like $150 a month or something. You just keep getting therapy. And he's like, I have no way to do that. And they're like, okay, right. You're on your own. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to start building my own world.
He basically had to. He had no other choice other than to be seething and angry and hurt and disillusioned, you know, and like he still had problems trusting and going out into the world with like groups of people, you know.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, what I think we're kind of right now kind of skirting around it, but I'll
to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. So Mark was in a bar, and I think 2008. No, this,
the attack 2000. Is in 2000. Yeah, the attack.
Yeah, 2000. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, and so he goes to a bar. He befriends a group of dudes, and they're drinking. And Mark had a heavy drinking problem up to this point. I read that he'd been drinking on average 2 liters of whiskey a day.
See, I don't know metric system or alcohol. Yeah. So that means I'm unclear. Well, how much is 2 liters of?
That's
whiskey?
Like that's a little bit more than 2/5. Which is
again, math is
the large bottles.
Okay,
the large bottle,
a whiskey, like a large whiskey bottle a day.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Two
large whiskey bottles a day.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's a lot of whiskey. So, anyways, he then tells this group of guys that he's befriended that he enjoys wearing women's clothing and shoes. That's it.
Yeah,
that's it. Nothing. What is it? That's nothing. And then they wait for him to leave because I guess he always was the last to leave this bar, and then just stomp him pretty much an inch from his life.
Yeah.
To the point where I read this horrific thing where they were jumping on his head with both feet at one point.
And did you read the thing about, and the doctor, I think you were talking in the same detail probably.
Yeah. Well, the doctor had to take his eye out so that they could reconstruct his face and then put his eye back in. He was in a coma for a few weeks and then in the hospital for 40 days. And then after a year, his insurance dropped him because he couldn't pay anymore.
Yeah. So again, a heavy way to start off a documentary, but then.
Right.
But they
don't do it. It's not gruesome. It's not like sensational. It's not gruesome. The way that's one of the things I love about this doc. There's so many things to talk about this. Jeff Malmsteen is the director. This must be his first doc. It seems so first, you know, it has such a first doc feel. I don't know. I'm only guessing.
Oh, you mean the sense that like it's like kind of like a band's first album or something? Like it's like he put so much work into it because it's his first thing. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and it's there's also a lot of heart, but there's also it's not slick. It's not a like super slick doc. It doesn't look like he had years of film school and many docs to work off of. This seemed more of like a lot of handheld stuff, weird extreme close-ups that you would do when you make your first doc. You know. Mm-hmm. But I really felt like the story was told in such a tender and nice way that it just didn't like sensationalize Mark and his past. It really dealt with his present and future, you know, because, you know, Mark didn't even remember his wife. He didn't even remember anything about his marriage that he had.
Yeah. No, I think like, again, like there's some parts of this that, again, reminded me of Devil and Daniel Johnston, maybe in a similar way of like, there's sort of like a before and after trauma thing going on too. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it's not like really a focus of the film until like it's sort of maybe the last third where you really realize like, oh, this is like basically a form of like a transphobic hate crime, essentially,
right.
Happened.
Yes.
And we only hear ever from the people that attacked him once. You hear a snippet of audio. It's like a deposition or something where they basically admit that they planned. They're like, oh, he told me this thing. And then we decided we should beat him up. Like, it's clear that was the motive. And those guys, I think two of the guys didn't get anything. And then the main ringleader got like 9 years. which, yeah, so.
There was, I think, five guys, three people went to prison.
Yeah.
One of them spent 9 years in prison for almost completely killing somebody. But what's cool is that Mark comes out of it. It is kind of a metamorphosis story. I mean, he literally comes out of his coma not even wanting a drink at all.
Yeah.
Like, he's completely changed.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that just, that's just fascinating to me that that kind of addiction can go away. You know, it's just fascinating to me.
Right. Like, I mean, I can tell, like, there's certain things you can tell, like, he has an addictive personality that, like, by how much he smokes.
And his shoe collection.
And coffee drinking. So right. It's sort of like there's something there. But that is interesting that he doesn't have that association. He says, like, I look at a bottle of alcohol, I'm just like, oh, it's liquid. And I read an interview where he says he has avoided it because he doesn't want to, like, slip back into that level of obsessiveness. But, I mean, this is someone who clearly has, like, it's hard to know, like, what's going on. Like, how much of his personality before was so detail obsessive and so, like, craft oriented? Like, he was a really great illustrator, but and like, psychologically, there's, like, so much going on in here. It's just, like, really being able to read someone's emotions in the did you ever go to a child psychologist or anything? Have you ever had to do any of that stuff?
You mean as a child?
Yeah, as a child. I mean, no. As an adult, no. I you know, like, I had to go see them and stuff, but, like,
oh,
you know, like, have you seen, like, those courtroom things where they, well, there's an abuse case and they basically bring out a doll
and the
child be like, where on the doll? It's like, there's something about just how our whole upbringing is we interact with dolls and inanimate objects and project so much onto them. That was really striking to me in this. It's just like, he used to draw. Instead, he just was like, I can't draw. I physically cannot hold a pen.
Right.
I need to get all these stories out somehow. And he just chose to do it through these figurines.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. And then he also kind of switches mediums too, from illustration to photography. You know, and it's not like some people spend their entire life studying one or the other without being able to master either. But he's transposes his abilities to a different medium. It's really incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
And out of kind of necessity, right? Yeah, like
out of necessity,
the way that he wanted to do it in his head.
So for those people who have not seen this doc, which I imagine most of you probably haven't, what we're talking about is that after the attack, Mark builds a facsimile of a miniature Belgium village in 1940.
Have we not said that yet?
With World War
II. Now we're saying it.
Now we're saying it.
You have no idea what I was talking about for the last 15 minutes. Like, there's a Belgian Nazi. I don't know. Yeah. No, yeah. He builds a town. In a miniature town, using, like, Barbie dolls. And then I guess, what are those? Like, they're not the G.I. Joe dolls I grew up with, because those are, like, 5-inch dolls.
These are nice looking.
These are foot talls? How tall
I would
is
say
a
they're foot.
A 10-inch?
No. Barbies, I think, are, like, 8-inch.
Yeah.
Probably. And these are, like, foot. These are the ones you can buy at real hobby shops.
Mm-hmm.
These are, like, a foot tall with articulating legs and arms and necks and heads and have expressions. That's the other thing. There's that one doll where he's, like, pointing at his watch and yelling.
Yeah, the grimacing doll. This is a podcast. You're missing the really good impression. The grimacing doll just, like,
yeah.
I really should do more mime.
Yes, you should. So, like, in order to, so this was his therapy. So he would set up these war scenes and he would have the SS, the Nazi dolls, were his attackers, and he would kill them and get out a lot of aggression and feel much better by setting up these tableaus and photographing them. But, like, if I did that, sure, it would help me a lot, but my photographs would look like garbage because I'm not artistic like that. He is a genius on different levels, apparently, because he takes these photographs and they're incredible.
Right.
So it's really wild.
And here is a clip from the film that gets right into the discovery by the art world of Mr. Mark Hogan camp?
First saw Mark probably a year before I actually talked to him. And it looked like he had a remote control truck or something. It's like one of these RC aficionados. And then I decided that I was going to try to figure out a way to stop and talk to him. I go, hey, you know, how's it going? And he's like, oh, pretty good, pretty good. And he stops and proceeded to introduce me to the people in the Jeep. There were two figures in the Jeep. He says, this is actually so-and-so, who's someone I work with. And this other woman, she's actually an old neighbor of mine. I was like, has anybody else seen this stuff or talked to you, you know? Because you're the first person to ever really stop and said, yeah, that's interesting. What are you doing or where are you going or what's that all about? When I went to his house after I saw the photos, I said, you know, do you have any more of these? And he goes, oh, I've got thousands of them. And yeah, sure. Because I'm a photographer, I always just, how do you manage all your assets and your negatives? And he goes, oh, I never even keep the negatives, really. I think the negatives, I threw them away.
Okay, so Paco, the funny thing is I remember Aesopus magazine, which is where the magazine that ends up doing the layout of, did you ever see this magazine? It's like this pretty like nice art magazine that does.
What was it called again?
Aesopus, E-S-O-P-U-S. And
oh yeah.
Yeah. Right. So the guy who organizes that, so his neighbor sends all these photos to the editor of the magazine who also puts on art shows. And then kind of like a big pivotal point in the story is Mark actually going to New York and going to this gallery that I had heard of that was a pretty fancy gallery called White Columns, I guess in Chelsea. And it's really interesting, like Mark's conception of like what the art world is and
yeah.
Like, how he wants to kind of fit in, or how like, well, they'll be accepting of my transvesticism. And like, so like he has built up so many ideas in his head about it, but also he's still so shell-shocked about dealing with people he doesn't know and dealing with strangers and feeling like he's about to be attacked. It's like a huge deal for him to actually go into Manhattan.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's huge. That is, for a person that has, for good reasons, obvious trust issues, to be able to dismantle. I mean, he even talks about it as he's taking down Marwin Call. And by the way, his city is called Marwin Call. And within Marwin Call, there are bars. There's a church. And one of the bars is called the Ruined Stocking, which is run by a bunch of women that have cat fights every night.
Planned cat fights. Consensual cat fights.
Consensual, safe, planned cat fights as entertainment for the dudes, which is amazing. Oh.
And also that like everyone gets along in his world. Like the rule of the city is like, if you're a Nazi, if you're British, if you're American, we all get along in Belgium. I'm like, I have been to Belgium, and yes, as long as everyone's drinking, everything is fine with everyone. That is
right.
That is my experience of Belgium as well. Go. And again, this reminded me of the Daniel Johnston film, like kind of his kind of like, he's almost like has stage fright and can't like this, you know, being in public and like how, as they're both kind of outsider artists, right? So they both kind of have this weird relationship where there's people that are like, you know, treating them as less than. And I think right. That's like kind of what ends up being the case with outsider art often, unfortunately. But I mean, yeah, he's there because of the quality of the work. And I think like the interview with the director of Aesopus like kind of bears out. He's like, yeah, like these are really, just really good quality. He's like, it would be an interesting story. And if the photos were just okay, but these are actually really compelling photos.
Exactly. And one of the things he says about the photos, which I think was a really astute observation, something I kind of forget about. He's like, he's not winking. It's not ironic. He puts himself in these photographs, like his heart is there. And these are actual emotional scenes with dolls. It's like, how do you accomplish that? You know?
Yeah. Right. I know what he was talking about when you think of like a lot of people using dolls or using Barbie dolls specifically to like make like some kind of comment on like gender expectations or like even someone like Mike Kelly, who uses a lot of like stuffed animals and stuff.
Exactly.
Like that,
that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Yep. where it's like, it's sort of like about the dirtiness and the grime of it in a way. And there was like so much grime in this too. It's like I think I read a thing where he's like, I think it was a John Ronson interview. He's like, he likes it when it's muddy because it's easier to pose the dolls.
Oh yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. Well, and then when the clip you guys just heard, they you know, they show Mark walking down a fairly busy kind of country road with his you know, a little truck on a leash thing, and he's dressed in World War II garb. It's really fascinating.
Yeah,
really absolutely fascinating. But yeah, so then we see him in New York, and he's at the gallery. And then you can really feel his anxiety, you know, you can just feel it. And it's like, I'm not an artist, like a visual artist like that. So I've never had an opening, but I've been to a lot of friends' openings, and it is a weird environment where the artist is kind of just walking around trying to figure out what to do. And people are just staring at their stuff. I mean, we're both comedians, so we kind of have that, you know, where there's an audience, but you know, Mark, I think he needs a lot of air. He has to go outside a lot, you know?
Yeah, he's got to smoke his cigs. That's like the thing that's calming him.
Oh, and you're... And then...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I just told you this. I remember this the first time I saw it, and I just watched it again. I'm like, there's a couple that are... he's giving them lights for the cigarettes, and there are a couple I know from the Bay Area that were living in New York for like
that's crazy.
Mads and Kelly. Yeah, they're just talking to him about his collection of shoes. So yeah. It was just like so random. I remember writing to Mads like when I saw this film, I'm like, hey, I just watched this movie and you're in it.
Had he seen it?
I'm trying to remember what he said. I think he had, right. I think he just was in that scene of like, you go to art shows. This is just an art show you go to. So yeah, and that was like a pretty well-known gallery at the time too.
So. Got it. So yeah, Mark, as he says in the doc, owns well over 100 pairs of women's shoes. He enjoys wearing stockings and women's shoes, and so it's there's two very sweet and incredible moments in this section of the doc. One. He's wearing what looks like very uncomfortable men's leather dress shoes, mm-hmm. which he does not want to have on. So he really wants to change into women's shoes. And he isn't sure if he should or can. And then they show some people like saying, you've got time. Like, just go put your shoes on.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny because it's like the competing things in his mind is like, do I wear a suit to look like James Bond and like be like what I think a downtown artist is like, or a bohemian artist. And then people are like, no, just wear whatever. It's like, look around you. We're wearing whatever. And then it also has this fantasy in his mind of like, I'm not in fucking Kingston anymore. Like, I bet everyone wears women's shoes in Chelsea. You know, like he has like these two polar, you know, these two extremes he can go down.
Yeah.
Like the reality is just like, yeah, it's an art gallery. You can wear like a sport coat and high heels and no one will bat an eye, but it's not necessarily like, you know, everyone is also the same as you, but it's like, it's diverse. That's why it's the way it's New York. Yeah.
But it's not Warhol's factory. It's not like a bunch of, you know, like
there's
like
a woman covered in silver paint corner. And she's just
the other great moment is like he's there with his camera and he's a great photographer and he's only taking photos of women's shoes.
Yes.
Which I thought was awesome.
Yes.
I was like, that's just awesome. That is hilarious and fascinating.
Right. And it feels weird because like I feel like in the last 2 years, there's like this concept of like, you don't want to kink shame someone or anything like that. Or like, and like everyone is fine making fun of Quentin Tarantino. Like, cause he always fetishizes feet in movies.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, well, how do you, it's cause people feel like it's punching up when it's Quentin Tarantino, but it's like punching down when it's like, you know, someone who is abused.
Well, and I think Quentin kind of creeps people out. So there's a little, there's a little underlining tone to that stuff. But one of my favorite comedians of all time is Eddie Izzard. And, you know, I've seen him almost a dozen times now and he always comes out in fabulous women's shoes and whatnot. And then it's awesome.
Well, this reminds me, I wanted to bring up, because I had just started watching this other film on Netflix right now, which is called Disclosure. And it's with Laverne Cox is one of the filmmakers behind it. Sam Fetter is the director. It's really interesting. It's sort of like, I believe there's like, have you seen The Celluloid Closet? I know there's sort of like these films that are about
sure.
like media representation of minority groups. And this is like the first thing I've seen, which is like explicitly just like on a mainstream platform, just like, let's look at the history of trans representation in film. And I'm like, whoa, I really would be curious to put Marwan Call into that kind of discussion, not knowing as much of the film history about this stuff. I mean, like talking about going all the back to like, who's the guy who made Birth of a Nation? D.W. Griffith. They're talking about
yes.
and that.
Right.
He's done other stuff where he's sort of had these like trans characters, or like a lot of early cinema has like
right.
both weird like blackface and trans stuff going on in it. It's a, yeah. really a fascinating documentary. And then just like, also I feel like, you know, even by 2010, I don't think this would have been on a major platform the way it is now. Like in terms of like, obviously it's Pride Month, so we're talking about it, and Pride I think is probably why it debuted now. But just like trans actors being super like in a lot of stuff, and like just a lot more out visibility for trans actors. And I just think this is an interesting film to think about in that spectrum, because it's a guy who was hate crimed for wearing women's clothing.
Right.
He wasn't even wearing them at the time.
No.
Which
he just said he did.
Just, hey, I do this. And then like he fucking got beaten to nearly lost his life over it.
That's insane. Yeah, that's insane. And so, you know, I can't recommend this documentary enough. I love Marwan Call. I love that it's just so like kind of low budget, but with like such a, you know, high theme. You know, the themes of this doc are still present today, and I think the doc is well made, and it's very interesting. And Mark is a very interesting subject. Like, I love when he's just sitting on the couch with his legs folded and just talking and going through his story. You know,
yeah. I feel like one thing that must have been. I'd like to see more. I'd be curious about the backstory. It's just like how him and Jeff Malmsteen got along, because it seems like he doesn't trust like very many strangers at all. And obviously right. like Malmsteen is filming him in the world that he's in. He's letting him in. He's going to the gallery with him and stuff too. He's sort of like,
yeah.
And he ends up becoming one of the dolls. There's a doll yes. that is like Jeff, the filmmaker.
That's a good point. Movie. I forgot yeah. that he makes dolls replicas
Everyone
of
knows.
His
yeah.
Of his friends. And it's probably, you know, the people that he loves the most, like his buddy Tim, that like, you know, was saying too, like he went to one of the art openings and people were kind of talking smack about his work. And he was like, fuck you guys. Mm-hmm. One person said, why don't we go see real war pictures? And he's like, these are real war mm-hmm. pictures, because the war that Mark it has going on inside of him. And I was like, God damn it. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I had one question for you because one of the people that Marwan Call is named after is his neighbor, Colleen. And I feel like I'm glad that she handles the entire situation in a pretty like even way. Cause I feel like if this was like, you know, San Francisco or something, even though San Francisco is very liberal, like you've got these Karens, right? You could have someone who's like, why are you putting me in your stories? Like, and
yeah.
that Colleen's very just like, oh, he's a nice guy. Give him my old shoes. Oh, he put yeah. me in a story. But I'm like, hey, you wanted to marry me in your story? That's weird. I feel like that's like, thankfully it didn't become like a bigger conflict.
But yes.
I don't know if
you
thought about that.
I mean, I didn't really think that much about it, but like, I think it shows the love and admiration they have for Mark, mm-hmm. you know, that it's not like his intent wasn't to be creepy or to be misogynistic or to be toxic. Like his intent is like, I really like this person. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's kind of a bow to most people.
Do you know, honestly, like that was a weird thing watching this and feeling through like 2/3 of it, kind of feeling like I'm like, is this misogynist? And then it's revealed that he wears women's clothing. I'm just like, oh, I think I have to rethink how I was thinking about that. So yeah. Watching it again this time, I'm like, my first reaction watching this is just like, it's like pinup fetish stuff.
Right. And, yeah.
But
absolutely.
Which you can, but then he's kind of like, I want to be the pinup. It's actually part of it. It's like, I want to be both right. like this macho World War II pilot guy and a pinup at the same time. And it's just, it's kind of fascinating layer to this as well.
It's absolutely fascinating. Another fascinating part that came out of this doc is the picture. There's that famous picture now.
Yes. Oh, Lordy.
That got shared a lot on Facebook. I think it was one of the real first viral Facebook sharing moments, actually. And someone took the photo of one of Mark's photos and was like, this is what real men look like. These are real men. And it's a photo of one of the dolls carrying another doll on his back while he's like firing a replica gun, mm-hmm. Seemingly in battle.
Right. Because it's like kind of like soft focus, so it could look like they're real people.
Yeah, if you don't know what the story behind it and you just glanced, yeah, you would think it was real. It looks like a true American, red-blooded American saving his buddy in the middle of war against fascism.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's the photo that Mark, who likes to wear women's shoes, took of some dolls that he's working through because he was a victim of hate crime, and it was just misinterpreted and then used for different purposes. You know, it's like, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, I was reading in the John Ronson article, like, they're saying, like, the week that Caitlyn Jenner came out publicly as trans, right, like, you know, had fully come out, that someone took that image as a commentary on Caitlyn Jenner coming out being like, this is what a real man looks like. And then someone in the subcomments being like, ha-ha, You're sharing a photo by someone that was is trans and on the spectrum of, you know, being transvestite, and then was actually a victim of a hate crime, and that person had to be kind of like, oh, that's not what I meant. So it's like,
yeah,
like confronting people about using, what a weird like layering of like using that image to say this is what real men are, to be transphobic, and then realize that like the photo you took was also like someone that was a victim
incredible.
Of hate crime. So it's just so much, it's what a weird irony, like a triple yeah. level of irony happening.
And there's a lot of levels in this doc. I've seen Marwin Call now probably six times, this doc, and each time I find something new. Like this time around seriously, I for some reason never remember there's a witch in Marwin Call.
Yeah, I didn't remember that either. Deja. We got to talk about Deja for a second. Yeah.
Yeah, there's this character called Deja Therius or something.
She's Thoris? Like a Belgian witch. You know, the Belgian witch of Marwin Call. Of course.
Yeah, she's the Belgian witch of Marwin Call. It's so odd that it's like...
She's got a time traveling machine made out of VCR. That's every Belgian I know.
She does. And it's awesome that I remember as a kid, I used to make like time travel machines, you know, like little, you know, fun little things like that. And when he holds up this old VCR that is Deja's time travel machine. And it's so awesome because I think there's a phone as her chair, you know.
And, yeah.
It's hard to describe, but it's like every time I'm always like, oh, that's right. There's like this witch, this supernatural character within this kind of supernatural yet real,
right.
yet not.
Okay, so that's another thing. Like a witch theoretically doesn't need a machine to time travel. A witch can just time travel because she's right. a witch. Yet
yeah.
he's like, I got this VCR. I got to do something yeah. with it.
Right.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not chronologically accurate to World War II, the way everything right. else in here is.
And he's like, I took apart this VCR because it ate my favorite porno tape, which I thought was, I was like, that's amazing. I've had to do that too, by the way, Mark. I understand your pain.
I've heard a story, this is a back to the VCR days and pornography, of someone I knew, like his roommates, took like a porn tape he had and like a tape that had like a film project and like unscrewed the screws on the VHS tapes and then just like replaced the reels.
Oh no.
Which is like somehow more sinister than taping over one with the other.
Yeah.
It's just swapping them.
Yeah.
Oh, and then just like, hey, do you want to see my film project? And then,
oh man. Have your grandparents and everybody in the room?
Yeah, classic.
That is amazing. All right, so we have our rating system, and today we've chosen Dead Nazis to give this a rating. George, how do you rate Marwin Call?
You know, I see that Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 98%, and I guess that would be like four dead Nazis and then like 80% of a dead Nazi, so like a dead Nazi with a missing nose or something.
Limb or yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Rotten Tomatoes on this one. I'm going to say I see nothing that could be improved on.
No.
Like, who am I to improve on a classic documentary? Like, this is like not in the classic canon that people talk about. Not. Maybe because it came out in 2010.
But it's a sup-doc classic, though. We're going to give it our stamp of classic.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this forever. And, five dead Nazis from me.
Five dead Nazis from me, too. So try to find this online. I believe it's streaming somewhere. And but try to watch it and let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your opinion on Marwin Call, if we missed anything or if you happen to know Mark or whatever. Just let us know. Get in contact with us.
Give us a Marwin call out. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I also love the way this ends. Do you remember the ending? This is like, I think I had forgotten about the ending. That the Mark character, his figurine suddenly has a miniature version.
Oh,
and
right.
Cameras. I'm like, oh, my God, we are entering like Ant-Man. We're going to be Ant-Man at the end of this.
Well, it reminded me of like I don't know why, but of like a Zappa thing. It's like Zappa liked to unfold and to fold and to fold into stuff, and kind of reminded me of like that. I don't know why, but yes, his character, his Dow character has a Dow character basically by the end. It's incredible.
Yeah. Like it's just, that was like, I'm like, oh fuck. I completely forgot that this is how this ends. It's like just the end. It's like a to be continued essentially.
Right. Yeah. That's right. That's awesome. All right. So let's get into some sup doc business. We like to play pitch a doc. Do you have a doc you would like to pitch that should be a documentary, a story?
I was thinking about it and this somehow came up. I think I just thought of this watching this, not specifically for any thematic correlations other than it's someone who has a disability, who's an artist, is a friend of mine from the Bay Area, Dax Pearson, who's a musician. And he was in a very bad car accident in the 2000s and has been having to relearn how to even make music and do, you know, basically he's quadriplegic. So, I think that there would be a really fascinating story to following Dax's life and the work he's making now and his sort of like, you know, he's a really interesting dude and it's a really interesting story and a great artist. So, I just thought it'd be...
Oh, that'd be
awesome.
Someone
should make the Dax Pearson film, I think.
What kind of music?
Experimental music. Like he was involved in a lot of like kind of like experimental music back in the 90s and 2000s. He was playing my friend's band for a while. It was kind of like a folksy band and then also making like stuff with a lot of the Anticon people. So I think
that's interesting.
I think there was a cover story on him in the East Bay Express maybe last fall or something. So
has there ever been a doc about Negative Land?
Yes, there was one that Craig Baldwin made, I think, back about their fight with U2 or the Casey Kasem, the infamous
the Casey
Kasem thing. There's a Negative Land doc from then, but that was so long ago that now I know one person who's in Negative Land now.
Oh wow.
And I think they were touring as a two-piece for a while. But yeah, I think it's only maybe one original guy, and then John Lydecker, who I know who performs as Wobbly, is also in Negative Lamb now as well.
Interesting. Yeah. That's interesting. Cool, man. So, again, guys, we present to you Marwin Call. If you can find it, watch it, let us know, get a hold of us. And
LA Public Library, once that's open again, you can get it there. I know.
There you go.
I got it. Yeah.
And also hit us up on our Patreon, please. We could use your support. So go to Patreon and check out Sup Doc's page. And, you know, if you can give us a buck or whatever, that would be awesome. So George, this was cool. I'm so glad we finally got around to, recapping Marwan.
Yeah. Shout out to Beth Lissick for introducing this to both of us. So
as always. Yeah. All right. Thanks everybody.
Thanks. Hey, thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com.
We've been recapping reality since 2015.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scovel.
For as little as a buck a month, you can donate to this show through our Patreon page, patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you want to help us out in other ways, please share the show with friends. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Find out more about Paco and George's comedy gigs on the About Us page on our website.
SupDoc is by doc fans for doc fans. So if you want to advertise with SupDoc, got a film you want to recommend, or any opinions, please hit us up.
Email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.